Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. It's been 8 months and 20 days since the WHO formally declared COVID-19 a pandemic. And yet, it sure doesn't feel that way out there in the world. In the spring, the roads were eerily quiet, with not only schools, restaurants, and entertainment venues closed, but also most stores and offices. There were few places for people to go. Not so today. And yet, the pandemic is as bad as it's ever been. And I'm not alone in seeing this contradiction. The experts on the excellent podcast, This Week in Virology, recently captured the dichotomy.
For a lot of people, it doesn't feel like it, but the disease burden nationwide right now is worse than it has ever been. Much worse,
much worse
than it has ever been. Okay. This is so far the worst time yet in the pandemic, and it's still accelerating. And I keep saying this, nobody's listening. Okay. I think that the disease burden is directly proportional to our community behavior.
Oh, absolutely.
And depending on how you look at the graphs, whether you want to call this the second wave or the third wave, it's huge.
It's the
biggest surfing wave you've ever seen pictured. It's a tsunami.
I think people need to think about the fact that back when people were all really scared and, you know, uncertain in, you know, April, the numbers are worse now. Yeah. We know more, but the numbers are a lot worse. Yeah.
As we've just heard, the pandemic is as dangerous as ever. But for many people, and maybe you're among them, as the pandemic stretches on, exhaustion is setting in. You may be tired of the fear and isolation, tired of it limiting your daily life and hearing it dominating every news cycle. You may be even be tempted to tune out this very conversation, but I'm asking you to stay with me because you might be experiencing what researchers are calling COVID fatigue, and you're not alone. Here to help us dig into the psychology of this phenomenon, to help us understand it better, and offer some suggestions for fighting it so we can remain vigilant are Jacqueline K. Gollan is professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine. Hello, Dr. Gollan. Welcome to the 21st.
Hi there. Thank you for having me.
Emma Frances Bloomfield is Assistant Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and co-director of the Public Communication Initiative run out of UNLV's Greenspun College of Urban Affairs. Hello, Emma. Thank you for joining us.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
And we also have Shyla Mergane. She is health psychologist at UW Health at the University of Wisconsin. She's also a University of Illinois alumna. Hello, Shyla, and thank you for being with us as well.
Oh, thank you. It's just wonderful to be part of this important conversation.
And listeners, for the next two segments, our phone lines are open. The number to call is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. We want to hear from you. Are you struggling with COVID fatigue? Have you found yourself increasingly frustrated by hearing about COVID or by restrictions or by the pandemic shaping your daily life? You're not alone. Give us a call if you have a question for our guests or if you want to share how COVID fatigue is affecting you or those close to you. The number to call is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21st Show. Dr. Gollan, I want to begin with you. We'll get to some solutions later on, but first I just want to set sort of a framework and build an understanding of this phenomena. Just what exactly is COVID caution fatigue? Why is it a problem?
Caution fatigue is that exhaustion and sense of tiredness about taking safety precautions that reduce exposure to COVID-19. It occurs because we're in a constant state of high alert. It's activated by a stress hormone called cortisol, which affects our health and brain function. So specifically, when we have high constant levels of stress, we start to get to use the stress and then start to pay less attention to the safety habits that we're being advised to follow.
From a human psychology perspective, is it more difficult for people to stay committed to abstract goals like improving public health by staying home over a, you know, as the time frame stretches on, as this is an indefinite goal that people are trying to meet?
Yeah, there's a couple of things with caution fatigue, and humans have a hard time detecting and understanding and anticipating true threats, which are abstract for some and concrete for others. And we combine that with our limited attention, whereby we have too much information or distractions, for example, with social media and other forms of media, and we don't remember what to pay attention to. So those, again, are abstract challenges in our ability to sort out what is actually a true threat. And then ultimately, we show some flawed decision-making under stress or uncertainty, partly because we don't have relevant information or we're unaware of the biases we may be using, and we use some subpar risk assessment with this abstract presentation of COVID-19.
Shaila Morghane, is COVID fatigue something that affects people who are more skeptical, who have been buying into some of the misinformation about the pandemic, the idea, you know, that masks are an infringement on freedom or what have you? Or is this something that affects everyone, even people who are trying to act responsibly, follow restrictions, follow the science and the public health recommendations?
I think that's a great question. No one is really immune to COVID fatigued, and most people will experience it at some point during the pandemic. As we've been highlighting, the compounded stress and exhaustion from all the lifestyles we've had to overcome, as well as a lot of worry, can lead to this notion and sense of COVID fatigue. Because the pandemic is persisting for much longer than many of us anticipated at the beginning, we're definitely seeing an increase in people feeling burnt out, defeated, and engaging in risky behavior. And the holidays can really amplify this, as we're not able to do some of those joyful traditions. We're not able to see some of the loved ones we look forward to during this time. And we're also seeing a rise in mental health challenges. And as a result, our next challenge is to really flatten the mental health curve as we go into this next stretch and keep ourselves resilient and really continuing to engage in those COVID safety precautions that are recommended by the CDC.
You know, I wonder, as you know, we're 8-9 months in since the WHO declared this a pandemic now, and even people who are, you know, true believers, they accept everything, but they don't get COVID. They don't know anyone close to them who's been seriously affected by the pandemic. From a human psychology standpoint, is it natural for people's perspective to change, where maybe they feel like it doesn't affect me? That sort of makes it easier for complacency to set in?
Because it is invisible, it is common for people to start to take risky behavior, especially if some of their friends or family members are putting a bit of peer pressure on them. And we are not designed to live in isolation and to quarantine ourselves for months at an end. And with the winter, so many of those traditional coping strategies that we use to get through the colder, harder months are not available. And I think people just feel a sense of burnout. You know, there's tremendous uncertainty. And we can handle stress and uncertainty for short periods of time, but then engage in those recovery, those healthy behaviors to recover. But instead, what we're finding is that people lack a lot of those traditional coping strategies, are feeling isolated, and their mental health begins to suffer. And then again, you know, we're more likely to take risks just because we don't see the immediate consequence of often to our health.
And I wonder if this happens on the other end of the spectrum too, right? I mean, people who've had COVID recovered. I mean, we heard the president, after he recovered, brag that he was now immune and would be breathing and kissing everyone in the crowd at his rallies. I mean, how is that shaping COVID fatigue as well? Is that dangerous?
Absolutely. We're definitely getting mixed messages from a lot of authorities in power. And some of them are false statements that give us a kind of an unprecedented and unfounded sense of safety, when in fact this is a time to really hunker down even more in following those CDC guidelines. And it can feel like a sacrifice, but we really want people to take the long-term view and not just the short-term immediate kind of pleasurable, enjoyable, you know, seeing people over the holidays. Instead, I always encourage people to do a practice of temporal distancing where they think about 6 months from now or a year from now when we're on the other side of this pandemic, how do they see themselves having navigated this successfully? What would that future self say to you today about what action steps to take? And I think when we look at it that way, we can start to feel a sense of pride that those simple things like wearing a mask, social distancing, avoiding large gatherings, even saying no to an in-person holiday family get together, we can have some pride in really doing our part to keep ourselves safe and our loved ones safe. And that gets us back in that driver's seat.
Yeah, I like that idea of temporal distancing, and we're going to let that stand as a sort of a preview of some of these other solutions we'll be talking about later in the conversation. For now, though, I do want to stick with sort of the misinformation aspect of this that we were just talking about. And Emma Frances Bloomfield, I want to bring you into the conversation. You're a professor of communication, an expert in medical misinformation. How does the effectiveness of public health messaging and restrictions shift over time as COVID fatigue sets in, frustration grows?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think I would echo what a previous person had mentioned about the mixed messages that we often receive. Because COVID-19 is novel, science and medical experts have been trying to figure out a lot about it since WHO declared it in March. So with that new information coming in, the science has to be done, the research has to be done. It can be slow to get precise, accurate information. But misinformation can spread extremely quickly, and that leads to mixed messages that people are hearing about the virus, how to prevent the virus spread, and what precautions we should be taking. And increased information and mixed messages can further lead to fatigue. If you have a simple, clear message about what you should be doing and everyone's on the same page, it's easier to follow that advice. But the more information you have, the more confusion that there is, it can further exacerbate feelings of fatigue and uncertainty about what we should be doing and who we should be listening to.
Can you recover from that? I know we don't have a lot of global pandemics in recent memory to compare it to. A lot of people look back to 1918, but where we've had such divergent messaging in this year, you know, presumably with the new administration coming in Washington, there will be a bit more consistent messaging from the top. But is it too late to sort of go back, put the close Pandora's box, put the genie back in the bottle, choose your metaphor there?
It's unfortunate, but misinformation oftentimes has an anchoring bias. So if that's the first piece of information that you hear or the first piece of information that resonates with you, it's extremely hard to dislodge it. But it's not impossible. I think a new administration, as you say, clear, consistent messaging from the top, experts getting on the same page with leadership can do wonders to correct that misinformation, but it is going to take a concerted effort. The correct information has to be repeated frequently so people get the message about what the new information is. But we are walking uphill, right? Traveling uphill in terms of correcting so much of the misinformation that's already out there and circulating and that has taken root in some people.
Do you think there needs to be, should there be a different message at 10 months, you know, versus what it was in the beginning? Or is, as you said, consistency the key here?
I do think being consistent and making sure that what leaders are saying, not only the top administration, but state leaders are being consistent with the CDC and WHO recommendations, that can help people rewrite the narrative and say, okay, these are what everyone is saying. This is what everyone is saying about how to combat the virus. So there's a clear path that people can follow. I think the consistency in the message, being hopeful and encouraging that we will hopefully, you know, have more concrete solutions soon can be a way to get people on the same page.
Listeners, if you're just tuning in, we're discussing COVID fatigue. We need to take a break here very soon, but we're talking about COVID fatigue, how the longer the pandemic stretches on, the more exhausting it becomes, and how it can make us susceptible to complacency. We're talking with Jacqueline K. Gollan, professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at the Feinberg School of Medicine at Northwestern University. Shyla Mergain is a health psychologist at UW Health at the University of Wisconsin, and Emma Frances Bloomfield is assistant professor of communication studies at the University of Nevada. Our phone lines are open. Are you experiencing COVID fatigue? How's it affecting your life? Give us a call at 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. We'd also love your questions for our guests. Before we take a break, I do want to read a couple of texts we got from our Text the 21st group on COVID fatigue. John in Rockford says, I noticed COVID fatigue 2 weeks into the month of March. It's been downhill ever since. It's a long hill to be sliding down. Jean in Champaign says, I've lived alone for the last 10 years, except for my dogs. So the isolation is not as hard on me as I'm sure it is on others. Certain places I used to go are no longer available, so I do miss those places and people. Definitely, it is getting harder the longer the pandemic goes on. One of the biggest problems I face is seeing people trying to live as if nothing is going on and putting the rest of us in danger. Shyla, when we come back, I want to ask you about the role of shame in this, right? Whether we need to be responding to people not following guidelines with empathy or shame. And we're going to talk about that after a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us. Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about COVID fatigue. The longer the pandemic goes on, the more exhausting it is, particularly the restrictions. And it can make a lot of us susceptible to complacency. And we're talking about that with Jackie Gollan, who's a professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Northwestern's Feinberg School of Medicine. Also, Shyla Mergain, a health psychologist at UW Health at the University of Wisconsin, and Emma Frances Bloomfield, assistant professor of communication studies at the University of Nevada. We want to hear from you, 800-222-9455. If you are feeling COVID fatigue, or maybe you're frustrated by COVID fatigue, call us, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Shyla, before the break, I was beginning to ask, I read a couple of texts from our listeners. One of them said that one of the biggest problems he faces is seeing people living as if nothing's going on, putting the rest of us in danger. And there is this element of wanting to point fingers when you see people out in the world not wearing a mask. And it is frustrating for those of us who are working so hard and sacrificing, you know, family time and other things to try and, follow the guidelines. But what is the proper response for, you know, when we see people dealing with COVID fatigue? Shame? Empathy?
Such a good question. We know research on shame shows that that is not a powerful motivator for behavior change. Instead, people often resist and get defensive and continue to engage in that risky behavior, such as not wearing masks. I think the proper response is empathy and compassion. You know, again, if you look at the psychological toll of having dealt with this pandemic for so many months, data out of the CDC was finding that upwards of a third of people are reporting higher levels of depression, anxiety, alcohol, and drug dependency. And when we are faced with this kind of ongoing, prolonged stressor, denial can be one of those ineffective, but often frequent coping strategy. So instead, I think responding with some kindness and compassion and empathy, and just saying something as simple as, you know, I'd appreciate it if you can wear a mask when we get together, or, hey, you see a stranger walking into a store with no mask, the clerk would be happy to give you a mask. And again, when we look at the ongoing recommendations from the CDC, there's some strong evidence that it's suggesting wearing the mask actually does help us protect us from the virus, from those droplets that are in the air. And here in Wisconsin, we just had, in my town of Madison, we just had our first teenager at East High School die of COVID-19. And I think when you see the virus hitting and having the profound impact of losing a life to a teenager, then all of a sudden it can start to ring true that we're doing this for ourselves, but also maybe for a stranger that we'll never meet. And I think there can be a source of pride of doing these protective actions that can really help our community. So if it's somebody you know, you might have a conversation ahead of time of the get together, or even with a stranger, you can just reach out and encourage them to use that mask.
And can you talk a little bit about the idea of radical acceptance when dealing with COVID fatigue?
Yes, radical acceptance is an aspect of mindfulness that Tara Brach really brought to the forefront in the mindfulness community. And it's this sense that if you can't change it, how do you learn to get into it? And we're really living in a new normal, and we will be for the foreseeable future. So when life is difficult, when we do have to wear a mask and engage in social distancing, working on just accepting what is, that it is what it is, but we can make a choice, and a choice that helps us feel good. And when we look at it from that acceptance, we don't, especially with the radical acceptance, we don't have to like it. We could wish it were different. There can be some grief around the losses we're experiencing, but also looking at the silver lining, because what we resist persists. So if we're in this place of denial and struggle and upset all the time, not only are we going to have stress, but we're causing ourselves a lot of emotional distress. So instead, acceptance kind of frees us and puts us back in the driver's seat. And in that, then we can really refocus on finding the silver lining, some of the gratitude. I'm hearing a lot of people saying this holiday season is going to look a lot different, but it can be a time of reflection. It can be a time to choose to do what we want to do on those important days, like Thanksgiving last week, and do something completely different. And we can start to choose activities that bring delight, that give us a sense of accomplishment. And also, with looking at the silver lining, having some gratitude for all the things that we have that maybe we previously took for granted. And that is powerful, because it shifts us out of that negative emotional state to a place of more positive emotion. I saw recently, you know, during COVID, it's a time where we don't need more things, but we can shift to really focus on maybe some of those aspects of life we've been taking for granted, because we can't do certain things like just go to a restaurant or a show with friends and enjoy a large meal all together.
Dr. Gollan, I want to ask about how COVID fatigue affects the way we assess and maybe how willing we are to take risks, right? What I wonder if you can talk about putting the risks of the pandemic back into perspective, if fatigue is perhaps skewing how we're looking at things.
Yeah, there's a number of things we can do. Certainly we can start to take stock of how well things have been going, if it's possible to take a look at how you've rearranged your rewards in the context of the pandemic. For example, have you been able to get some things accomplished at home, or have you increased your social connections with people, with family and friends via, virtual opportunities? Have you been able to increase some other health protections as a result of what you've been doing? I think it's also important to understand, again, taking some temporal distancing, which I think was a very smart comment to make, which is, how do you want to position yourself so that when this pandemic ends, you are stronger, fitter, more knowledgeable about the world around you, in terms of, you know, global management of things like pandemics? How do we engage people in as part of the solution, and, you know, methods by which how people can contribute their viewpoints and also actively change things in their communities to improve health precautions and protections? How do you help people reduce risk while doing things that make you happy? So how are you able to rearrange that reward-risk balance and really thinking carefully about what level of risk you're comfortable with. You know, if they think about traveling over to Japan several years ago when there was not a pandemic going on, I noticed a lot of people traveling wearing masks. And this was out of a courtesy, almost an altruism or respect for others, whereby if one felt ill or sick or had a cold, that a person would wear a mask so as to not spread that to others as they were traveling on buses and trains and around the cities. And I thought that was a highly respectful gesture that was going on. It wasn't about reducing your freedom. It was about encouraging health and well-being for a collective. And I think ultimately thinking through here about how this is a hardship for many, many people, and that there's a profound impact that this pandemic is going to have on our lives for years, but that we need to, with ourselves and with others, create a coherent and strategic plan in how we handle this now, and then how we continue to handle these kinds of things in the future as a group and a society.
I've heard that idea that this growing acceptance of mask wearing might be something that that persists, and hopefully we'll all have a little less of the little less lethal coronaviruses, the common cold, spreading around if we can adopt that practice beyond COVID-19. Emma Bloomfield, I want to ask you about the news cycle, right? As the president said, COVID, and that can, I think, breed a sense of resentment and frustration, maybe leading to complacency as the pandemic drags on. And in particular about the news, I mean, you have that aspect of it. But on the flip side, there is this, the ways that the pandemic is invisible, where you see numbers on a screen and death counts, but you don't actually see bodies or caskets or inside hotels or hospitals, I should say, as people are struggling to breathe. And I was thinking if the pandemic is a weather-related natural disaster, right, if we were had Hurricane COVID killed 268,000 Americans and had those images filling the TV screen, is that sort of thing that would make a difference? Is the invisibility here, balanced by just the sort of domination of COVID? How is that affecting people?
The tangibility and the concreteness of COVID are very challenging. And it's something I study also in my work around climate change, right? How do you make something look tangible, make it felt to people so it's in their immediate frame of reference? And as you say, focusing on something like a natural disaster, something physical that you can portray as a manifestation of that issue can be a very powerful way to represent something. The news media certainly talks about numbers and trying to quantify the way that COVID has affected our nation and the world. But another way to make something concrete is not to focus on the big picture numbers, but to focus on individual stories, people who have lost their jobs, people who are struggling to care for family members that have COVID or are at high risk if they do catch COVID. People who have gone to COVID parties and then regretted it because then they catch it when they thought it was a hoax. Individual personalized stories can also be a way to bring this abstract, amorphous idea of this invisible virus into a very personalized story for people to understand it. I think we can have both. We can have those big picture numbers so people get a sense of just how pervasive and how difficult and challenging COVID is, but also balancing that with other more tangible, concrete stories that would resonate with people and help people see the actual damages being done when we say over 200,000 lives are lost. You know, what does that really look like on an individual level? I think can be a powerful way to bring that to people's eyes, to visualize it.
And you have this, I've seen you quoted suggesting that people ditch desensitizing media. Can you talk about that, how that might help with COVID fatigue?
So if we think about messages that are constantly putting you on high alert, they're constantly making you stress. You see the same messages about how, you know, the world is ending. It can be very overwhelming for people and actually shut people off from viewing those messages. So it's a type of fatigue from the messaging. It happens a lot with climate change messaging, right? People just get tired of hearing the same kinds of apocalyptic messages, and it desensitizes them to that sort of extreme information. So I think that these types of messages, if you're hearing it on the news, you're hearing it from leaders, you're hearing it from friends and family, a solution for some people might just be to turn it off and to not pay attention to it and to shift their attention elsewhere.
And I'm sorry, that was actually Dr. Gollan whose quote that was. I misstated that. But we do have a call now. I want to go to Michelle calling from Central Illinois. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Hi. How do I tell my close-knit group of girlfriends that I really don't want to attend our holiday brunch? And how do I tell them that without making them feel bad or feel guilty about them going ahead and doing it?
Yeah. Okay. That is such a good question. Thank you for calling in with that, Michelle. I wonder, Shyla, if you want to talk about that dilemma a lot of people are going to be facing.
Sure, Michelle. It sounds like you have a great group of girlfriends. The first thing is to set up a time to talk with them. Often, if you can do a video chat, that can be effective because you can see all the nonverbals. And to get really clear in your mind on the position you want to take, which it sounds like you have, and to share that this is a personal decision that you thought about and you're not able to attend. But also, it's really important to create space to validate their feelings. They might feel disappointed or angry, and to just acknowledge that. And then I always think it's really important to suggest an alternative, like maybe you can attend that get together virtually and they can have you up on a laptop, or you'll look forward to doing a socially distanced walk with one of them, or come this summer or spring, you're going to really enjoy that in-person get together. But certainly some words like, you know, I'm not able to attend. This is a tough decision, but one I'm making to keep myself safe, and also want to make sure you're safe and that you hope that they understand. And then you might want to just follow up, you know, after the event, see how it went. And then again, just brainstorming some alternatives that you can really look forward to. You know, because I think these are tough conversations that people are going to have as the holidays are approaching, saying no to events or having to modify it in some way. And there is disappointment. There is a sense of loss. But, you know, making these tough choices of not getting together allows us to then be able to enjoy that brunch for years to come and have everyone at the table. We don't want to have these events be a super spreader event that's causing other people to contract the virus.
Absolutely. Great answer. And thank you again for the call, Michelle. Please call in again. Dr. Gollan, last question. We've got less than a minute left, but we did hear from one of our texters who works as a contact tracer and described hearing the fatigue in people's voices 8 hours a day, 6 days a week. Said they often cry after their shift ends, sometimes between calls. Dr. Gollan, you have some ideas for working on emotional fitness to combat COVID fatigue. I know it's not a lot of time to get into that, but if you can just share a couple of brief thoughts in the less than a minute we have remaining.
Yeah, and you know, I just want to send a note of appreciation for these contract tracers who are out there and the sense of emotional stress and compassion fatigue they may be feeling themselves as they're exposed to this. I think in order to stay emotionally fit, you can try to set goals of enjoyment and mastery, what I call GEMS. These can be little, accessible, rewarding experiences that you do that make you feel a sense of enjoyment or pleasure throughout your day. It could be a small cup of coffee, that you set for yourself. It might be a little bit of positive humor that you seek out online. As you learn to stabilize your own emotions and focus on continuing with your important job.
Okay, that is a gem of advice, and I'm afraid we have to leave it there. That is Dr. Jackie Gollan, a professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at the Feinberg School of Medicine at Northwestern. We've also been speaking with Shyla Mergain, a health psychologist at the University of Wisconsin, and Emma Frances Bloomfield, who is a professor of communication studies at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Thank you all so much for being here and sharing this important conversation with us on COVID fatigue. Listeners, more to come after a short break. This is The 21st. Stay with us.